David Cobb writes about college football and college basketball for CBS Sports. Follow him on Twitter on X at David W. Cobb. Cobb, we're going to get into week one, but I want to pose a question that Cerrito just posed to me because it's gotten me thinking about it another way. So, you know how in the coaching carousel, everything has been trending up in terms of the calendar. Earlier, earlier, earlier. Firings are happening earlier. Hirings were happening earlier. Do you think with the advent of the 12-team playoff that will pump the brakes on maybe the... I don't know if it's necessarily going to stop the firings, because I think the firings will continue to probably move up earlier because that's kind of the way it's been trending. But do you think that's going to cause some coaches that might be the hot names, if they think that they're in it and perhaps could have a playoff team, do you think that's going to slow them down?
It seems unlikely to me that a lot of head coaches that are going to be in the playoff would be candidates for other vacancies. But I guess you could see it from the group of five team that makes the playoff. That head coach is almost always going to be of interest to schools that have openings. And then there could be ACC and Big 12 programs that are having good years that get in the playoff mix, who their head coaches are of interest to Big 10 or SEC schools. But it's hard for me to see SEC coaches with playoff caliber teams or Big 10 coaches with playoff caliber teams being in the mix for other jobs. Where it could get interesting, though, with that whole train of thought, is with the hot coordinators. And are you going to coach four more games with your current team when you've got a head coaching job waiting on you? Or are you going to ditch your current program and leave them high and dry for the playoff, searching for a coordinator, promoting from within, so you can go ahead and take a head coaching job?
And should that affect your seed in the playoffs when you get your offensive coordinator leaves? And
it depends if they want it to.
Right.
They
lost their offensive coordinator, so they're going to be seeded differently, yeah. I don't know, as a matchup, you'd be rooting for a matchup. Ooh, let's play them. We have a better shot.
Well, so this is what's interesting, though, because, all right, in terms of, let's take Big 10 SEC. So Levy gets the Mississippi State job, coordinator, no head coaching experience. Beamer got South Carolina with no head coaching experience, wasn't even a coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
Walters at Purdue, right? He was coordinator, never been a head coach. Am I missing anyone in the last 2 years? Because that's the other thing that I've been noticing, is that the other trend is that the Big Ten and the SEC seem to be wanting to avoid the coordinator route. Now, it doesn't mean that those won't matter at other levels, but I don't know. To me, it really kind of keeps coming back to me. It's like, what's the job that's open? Because we do have a little bit of a frame of reference. I'm not saying it's apples to apples, but Notre Dame, when Brian Kelly left, was still technically, potentially a playoff team. He leaves to go to LSU. To me, it's going to be as simple as, if you're a coach that's not in the SEC or the Big Ten, I'm not sure it impacts your timing, because I think everyone's so desperate to get to those two leagues. But everywhere else, I could buy it.
Yeah, it's just sad to think about a college football playoff coach who's gotten his team to that point bouncing before he's even got a chance to coach his team in the playoff. Like, it's one of the unintended byproducts of expanding the postseason. And this and
the recruiting calendar. The fact that December's become such an important period. Like, I think that has as much to do with it as anything else.
This postseason is going to be ridiculously long. It's going to be the longest postseason in sports. It's going to start in early December and drag on all the way to mid to late January.
Well, the NBA says what's up.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, the NBA postseason maybe has the edge, but it's when you got the NBA free agency doesn't start during the first week of the NBA.
100%.
Right?
Yes.
And that's where we are in college football now. You're going to have the portal opening while there's multiple teams still competing for a title. You're going to have players entering the portal from playoff teams. You're going to have teams that are in the playoff with coaches who should be game planning, who should be scouting, work in the portal instead. So it's just, I mean, the whole thing is a mess. Don't get me wrong, I'm excited about the expanded playoff, but man, are there some like crazy sort of circumstances that are going to come up as a part of it.
No, I mean, I know you and I talk about this all the time, but I told Kevin this, like, if we're just talking about the 2024-25, as you point out, college football season as a competition, it's the most excited I've been for a college football season in a very long time. Talking about the product of as a whole. But then it's like when I think about everything else, it's like, okay, God, where are we? But like in terms of a competition, I think this is the most excited I've been because, you know, we don't know what's coming next.
Can't wait. Can't wait. And there's this idea out there that like, oh, well, if you were for playoff expansion, you're just a casual. You know, the real diehards liked it when it was just the BCS. And the real diehards, you know, would go back to the AP poll crowning a champion. You know, but what sport only wants to cater to its diehard fans? Every other sport is trying to grow and trying to appeal to a wider audience. And I get it. Like, college football has these niche, regionalized, local sort of traditions and whatnot. But you could, if you want that, go follow college baseball. I mean, college football is a national sport now. And, I mean, they're trying to bring it to Ireland, too, right? So it's a... You know, Brett Yormark probably wants to start playing games in Mexico City for the
whoa, come on, buddy. Right? So, come on. The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, that's
right. Yeah, what was the report? Did you see that a week or so ago that, the rogue Colorado staffer had been hitting up his connections in the Saudi government for private equity or something? That was wild.
Well, yeah, but to me, it's like, I think everyone misread the detail. They just focused on Saudis. When you actually read what he said, now granted, it's his account to Ross Dellinger, but basically he was implying, I had gotten the money from the Saudis, but the school basically said, no, we don't want to take the money. And it's like, I understand why the school may not want to get into that, but it was the fact that the Saudis were basically ready to pony over money. That's how I interpreted what he said. Like, that was the story to me.
Of course, they've already got their claws into professional golf. Why wouldn't they want to?
Well, didn't you? You're the one that pointed out, right? The basketball tournament in Vegas is Qatar funded.
Yes, yes, it's happening, and it's only a matter of time, maybe. And hey, if Colorado loses to North Dakota State tomorrow, maybe Dion will get on the phone with the Saudis to get some NIL.
Well, he's already at least casually instructed someone to take a meeting with him.
Right. I will say that guy, though, also had some crazy ramblings about how his connections with the Illuminati had been cut off as a result of what happened.
That's not true. He was cut off from the $3 trillion that the Mormon church provided him, his contacts.
So I guess he won't be hired at BYU anytime soon.
That's what it doesn't sound like it. I'm not sure he's the most reliable of narrators, but...
But the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia is going to have a week zero game very, very soon. It's going to happen.
I guess where I am willing to say, Cobb, see if you hear this. I'm not sure if like we're playing like in the Saudi World Cup stadiums in the next decade. It would not shock me if Aramco is funding some big tournament, you know, big week zero thing that includes payouts. Yeah, I'm not stunned by that.
There's going to be an attempt for something with the Saudis for sure.
Hey, I've got it right here. It's going to be the All State Big 12 presented by Aramco. Uh-huh. There you go.
Is Aramco ever willing to go second?
That's true.
They usually like getting their name out there first.
Yeah, they might have to take a back seat to All State though. I mean, the Big 12 and All State, they're big buddies now.
Yeah. When you're always in good hands, what are you making of the? What do you make of the UConn Big 12, will they, won't they, flirtation, whatnot? Like, I want your take on it.
I'm still kind of trying to process it. I don't love it from the basketball side because the Big East is such a good basketball league, such a good basketball product, and it's that collection of schools that really don't play football at the Division I level, with UConn being an exception because their football program is independent. And that Big East basketball product is solid. You got to imagine, though, Dan Hurley's got to sign off on this for it to become a reality. And I just can't imagine him being super eager to go into the Big 12 and have to deal with all that travel that would be required as part of the Big 12. I mean, obviously, the Big East has some flailing, you know, geographic semblance to it now. You got to go to Creighton as part of the Big East in basketball. But by and large, you know, you do have some regional games there in Big East. Whereas if you go to the Big 12, I mean, you're going from coast to coast on weeknights, playing in a really, really tough league. I don't think I love it. It just doesn't really feel like a natural fit to me, but I understand why the Big 12 wants to do it, because they're going to say, hey, look, we can be the best basketball conference, hands down. They might be already, but now you add in UConn, and it's not even close. I mean, that is then very clearly the best basketball conference.
All right, buy or sell this. This is kind of my broad strokes trying to put together what I think is happening. See if you buy this. So UConn, from an administration perspective, is very similar to where Arizona was from an administration standpoint. They have a ton of debt. They are very aware of said debt. It's not quite to the level that Arizona. When Arizona acted like being $250 million or whatever that number was in the hole was a rounding error, that's some like all-time spin zone stuff. But they have, the administration very much would prefer a much bigger check to pay down a lot of the debt that they have. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, that if you get that bigger check as a member of the Big 12, think about it from a paying the players perspective. As it is now, you can give your football program peanuts. Like the FBS independent UConn Huskies, they don't need a whole lot of NIL funding going to their football program to go out there and go 4-8, right? Like, so Dan Hurley can kind of hoard the NIL resources. Gino Auriemma, yeah, gets a good bit of it too. But if you go to the Big 12, then all of a sudden you have to trot out at least a reasonably competitive football team. And to do that, you have to pay the football players a lot of money. And so is the upgrade in the check from the Big 12 enough to where you can pay your football players, because there's going to be 105 paid football players on your roster in that conference, and still be able to afford a basketball roster that can compete at the top of the sport?
Okay, so everything you said is true, but think about it in these terms. When you are in debt, you don't really worry about future you. You're just worried about, it's like you had a bad weekend in gambling. You're just looking for every possible nickel and the cushions, whatnot, that you can pay the bookie so that your wife doesn't find out. Like, you're trying to get through that first, and then you'll figure out the rest. And to me, what it seems like is the administration very much wants that sweet Big 12 check, but everyone else that's the donors, the boosters, Hurley, I don't know. Like, I'm with you. Like, why would Hurley want to do anything different? This seems to be working, but Hurley also strikes me as the guy like that doesn't care. Like, he's an anytime, any place guy, but I got to imagine he'd prefer to keep it more the same than something completely new. But to me, that there seems to be some kind of struggle, because it feels like anytime there's a news leak, it's always intentional. And so to me, it's almost like, okay, well, they're either trying to pressure UConn into saying yes, or they're trying to pressure the Big 12 presidents into saying yes. And as much as we like to talk about university presidents being like these, you know, ultimate jurors, they're basically just going to do whenever the media consultant comes in and goes, hey, this will make you another $10 million or not. Like, that's a pretty easy math. And it seems to me like the consultants are saying this is better financially for everyone to do this. So it just seems to me that all signs kind of point towards holding UConn's feet to the fire. The reason why I say all that is, if that is indeed the case, doesn't this imply to you that the Big 12 is in business for additions beyond this?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I would think so. I mean, they have been open about being open for business. They've also seemed to have gotten a little bit more selective. You've seen this whole song and dance with Gonzaga to a certain extent. Like, the Big 12 and Gonzaga have been flirting over the last few years. Gonzaga doesn't even have football. So to me, it's like UConn's football team is sort of just the sacrificial lamb. Like, you want your full cut of a Big 10 or a Big 12 paycheck, then yeah, you have to put your football team out there as part of it. But I guess the UConn basketball brand has gotten so big that if you add that to the collection of basketball programs already in that conference, then the matchups that it creates, how about this? Kansas UConn, Arizona UConn, right? Baylor UConn. You get all these high caliber basketball matchups that could potentially drive TV revenue. And you're right. If it drives enough revenue to where the university presidents can look at a spreadsheet or a report from a media consultant that says we're going to make more money on the whole adding UConn, then I think they'll all fall in line and get on board with it.
All right, let's turn our attention to week one. Kevin and I mentioned Do you realize virtually every team of local interest, with all due respect to Vanderbilt playing Virginia Tech, almost every team of local interest, Memphis, Ole Miss, Arkansas, Mississippi State, Tennessee, they all have FCS games. So it's like, okay, we're not going to learn anything from week one from these teams, but, you know, it's we understand why everybody's excited to be back. What is, if you could only watch one game this weekend, which one are you watching?
Oh, it's probably Florida and Miami. I've kind of
anxiety bowl
around on. Yeah.
Now you're back where I was in June. Nothing I love more than
a, already in the pit.
Nothing I love more than a tight booty hole game. I live for it. Watching coaches and teams just play nervous. Oh my God, it's my favorite.
Right out of the gate, two third-year coaches that are sub 500. I mean, wrap your mind around that. Mario Cristobal and Billy Napier both have a losing records going into year three at powerhouse programs. I mean, that's a really nervous situation to be in. So, and Florida's got to win this game if they want to have any semblance of a solid season, because it's been well documented by now, their schedule is as tough as any schedule in the country. So you got to put some hay in the barn early. Then if you're Miami, you're getting all the dark horse playoff love. But if you go out there and lay an egg week one at Florida, it puts you in a really tough spot. Because, yeah, they could still go out and win the ACC, but another Mario Cristobal choke job on the national stage, I mean, that just sends the narrative around him into overdrive before September has even arrived.
It is also funny to think, though, I guess the one good thing for Mario is Florida State doesn't appear to be reloaded. Like, I'm not saying, like, oh, they're toast. Like, that still looks like an 8-9 win team at least. But you could lose this one, and as long as he does the move where he wins the league with a disappointing record, which he's done in Oregon a couple times, like, he is in the playoff this time. Like, there at least is that buffer. But, I mean, we're in also like a weird spot of, could the ACC be a one-bid league on whatever Monday? Sunday morning, because whatever. Let's say Sunday morning, can they be a one-bid league?
And that's where I was going to go with it, because we assume Georgia's going to beat Clemson. Florida State has already lost. If Miami loses at Florida, then your three preseason top 20 teams are all sitting there at 0-1. And Florida State was your only preseason top 10 team. They may not even be ranked once the new AP poll comes out. Miami wouldn't be ranked if it loses at Florida, and Clemson may hang on in the polls even if it puts forth a respectable showing against Georgia. We'll put it that way. So there's at least a chance you have all three of those teams unranked, all three of them 0-1, and those are your playoff contenders. Sure, maybe a Louisville could sneak up and win the league, or a Virginia Tech and back their way into a college football playoff bid, but it could be really, really bleak for the ACC coming out of this week. I mean, that's another reason why that Miami-Florida game is so huge. It kind of feels like the respect of the entire conference rides on the outcome of it.
Well, and then I know it's not technically ACC, but it's like if A&M beats Notre Dame, well, Notre Dame has the scheduling agreement with them. Like that could take another dip. I guess I want to close here, though. The other big game, of course, Sunday night, LSU-USC. The line is just dancing all over the place. I think it's now settled at 4 for LSU. Which side stinks more? Because I know this game's a trap, but I can't figure out which way it's a trap.
Right. I lean towards thinking LSU gets it done against the spread straight up. It's just no faith whatsoever in the USC defense. And you could rightly say that LSU has a ton of questions to answer defensively as well. It just feels to me, though, like we know more about LSU. And it's not a matter of talent. You know, Blake Baker has been a really good coordinator in the SEC at Missouri over the last couple of years. Just more faith in the talent and on the ability at LSU than at USC. But it's a fascinating matchup. I don't know that I trust Lincoln Riley and D'Anton Lynn to put out a defense that can hold LSU under 40 points.
Buddy, we appreciate it, man.
Yep, no problem.
That is David Cobb of CBS Sports.